Trying to navigate all the information out there about global events these days, it can feel like, well, a lot.
It really can.
You're just constantly hit with complex stuff, viewpoints that totally clash. And it's tough, isn't it, to figure out what's really important and maybe why it matters to, your life, your community. That's exactly why we do this deep dive. We sift through stacks of sources, articles, research, all that, and pull out the key insights. Think of it as a shortcut to being genuinely informed.
With maybe a surprising fact or two along the way.
Exactly. Today, we're taking a deep dive into antiwar.com. Now, this isn't just some random news site.
No, it's structured differently.
Right, it's a 501c nonprofit.
Yeah.
That means it's officially a public charity, tax-exempt, run for public benefit, not for profit.
Which is key to understanding its mission.
Absolutely. It's
Yeah.
dedicated to news, analysis, and some very specific viewpoints on U.S. foreign policy, with a really strong focus on anti-interventionist ideas.
And just to set the stage, our goal here isn't to, agree or disagree with any of the politics you'll hear about.
Not at all.
Nope. We're here to unpack the sources we looked at. We want to help you understand where antiwar.com is coming from, its editorial stance, the conflicts it zeroes in on, the main themes, and really how it frames the whole conversation about America's role in the world. We'll look at the specific language, the examples they use, even when it's pretty strong stuff, just to give you a clear picture of its unique voice.
Exactly. Everything we talk about today comes straight from the source material about antiwar.com. Our job is just to help you understand their content, their perspective. We're not taking sides on the issues they cover.
Right.
So let's get into it. What would you say is the foundation of antiwar.com, its identity?
Well, at its core, it really presents itself as independent media. It's consciously trying to offer an alternative to what it sees as, let's say, mainstream narratives. And that 501c status you mentioned, that's central. It highlights that mission-driven approach, signaling, hey, we're focused on public benefit, not clicks or profits. And that really shapes their content.
Understood. So it's mission-driven, not commercial. Given that, what are the sort of bedrock beliefs that drive their editorial stance?
Yeah.
How does that shape how they look at foreign policy?
Okay, so their main philosophy, stated very clearly, is anti-interventionism.
Anti-interventionist.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, for them, it's not just about avoiding this war or that war. It's more of a whole world view.
Oh, okay.
It suggests that pretty much any foreign entanglement is likely to lead to bad, unforeseen outcomes. And often they argue it eats away at freedoms and resources back home.
Right.
Tied right into that is a consistent critique of militarism. They're constantly questioning the motives behind military solutions, whether they're cost-effective, even the morality of them. And alongside that, there's this deep skepticism of official narratives. They're always challenging how the government, and often mainstream media too, portray conflicts and world events.
That's a really distinct lens, isn't it? It's
Oh.
not just reporting facts, it's interpreting those facts through a very specific philosophical framework.
Exactly.
So let's look at where these ideas actually show up in their work. The sources we looked at show a big focus on certain conflict zones.
Absolutely. And the sources make it clear. The overwhelming focus is on the Israel-Palestine conflict, particularly the situation in Gaza.
Cool.
Antiwar.com consistently portrays Israel as the aggressor in its coverage and puts a lot of emphasis, often with very graphic descriptions, on the humanitarian crisis there.
And the sources mentioned some pretty stark examples of those humanitarian concerns. What kind of headlines or reports did we see?
Well, a really dominant theme is the situation around starvation and blockade in Gaza. We
Right.
saw headlines like Gaza, spike in starvation due to Israeli blockade, another one. Gaza on brink of famine as UN says Israel is starving civilians. Wow.
There's even a heartbreaking report titled, "4-year-old girl dies of hunger in Gaza as Israel throttles food supply."
Gosh.
And their reporting also consistently focuses on civilian casualties, including people just trying to get aid. Like one headline, "IDF kills 85 Palestinians attempting to get aid in Gaza." It's a relentless focus on the human impact.
And it sounds like in covering this, the sources say contributors sometimes use exceptionally strong language, provocative even.
Yes, that's definitely highlighted in the sources. Terms like genocide and ethnic cleansing are explicitly used by some contributors when talking about Gaza.
Okay, so specific contributors, not necessarily the site's official stance always.
The sources point to specific articles by named contributors using these terms. For instance, citing Jonathan Cook's piece, the BBC isn't failing. Its job is to obscure the UK's partnership in Israel's genocide.
Right.
And another one mentioned was Mossad chief pushes for US assistance in Gaza ethnic cleansing. And again, just to be crystal clear for everyone listening, we're relaying what the source material says about the language antiwar.com uses. We're not endorsing the terms ourselves.
Exactly. It's crucial to understand how they frame the discussion. Using language like that immediately signals their profound skepticism of other narratives and their intent to frame the conflict in, well, the strongest possible moral terms.
It also seems clear they heavily critique U.S. complicity and support for Israel. The sources brought up a headline, only six reps vote to cut $500 million in military aid to Israel. What does a headline like that tell us about their view on U.S. policy there?
It really drills down on their core anti-interventionist stance, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It highlights U.S. financial and military aid as, in their view, a key factor enabling the actions they criticize. They see this aid as directly fueling the conflict and the humanitarian issues and pulling the U.S. deeper into what they see as a damaging foreign policy.
Makes sense.
And it's not just about the big military actions. Their coverage, according to the sources, also includes things like settler violence and the occupation, mentioning reports like Israeli settlers slaughtered dozens of sheep in attack on Palestinian Bedouins. It aims for a comprehensive picture from their specific viewpoint.
Okay. And this anti-interventionist lens, it's not just the Middle East. It applies just as much to other major conflicts, like the Russia-Ukraine war. Hmm. How do they frame that conflict? Because many people see it very differently.
Right. Antiwar.com consistently looks at the Russia-Ukraine conflict through the prism of U.S. involvement and escalation. They often call it a proxy war. The sources mention headlines like U.S. begins to comprehend complexity of Ukraine settlement, Kremlin, and an article from their conflicts of interest section titled Trump is escalating the proxy war in Ukraine.
Proxy war. That framing really shifts the focus, doesn't it?
It does. It moves the spotlight away from just Russia and Ukraine and puts it onto the role of outside powers, especially the U.S.
So what's the underlying critique when they use a term like proxy war? What's the deeper point they're making?
Well, it connects directly back to their broader and very deep-seated critique of the military-industrial complex.
That Eisenhower term.
Exactly. From their perspective, this isn't just about companies making weapons. It's a whole system that, they argue, actively needs and profits from conflict. Often, they'd say, at the expense of real diplomacy.
I see.
You see articles titled things like appeasing the military-industrial complex or, hey, poteez, America don't need no bunker busters either, that kind of thing.
Right.
And columnists like Ron Paul or Dave DeCamp are mentioned as consistently arguing for de-escalation, for negotiation in Ukraine, not just more military aid. It all reflects that core belief military solutions are often the problem, not the solution.
So this anti-interventionism, it's not just picking specific conflicts. It's a consistent thread running through their critique of U.S. foreign policy overall.
Absolutely. They are consistently critical of U.S. leadership, politicians across the spectrum, really, portraying them as either maybe misguided or sometimes actively making things worse globally.
Any example of that?
Yeah, the sources cited things like U.S. official calls Netanyahu a madman, or another headline, Biden makes Americans targets in the Middle East, then campaigns on their deaths. The language shows a real distrust of the established political and foreign policy figures.
This brings us to something really important for you, our listener, especially if you're here in Deer Park, LaPorte, or Pasadena. How do these big international discussions about far-off conflicts actually connect back home? How might they impact your community? Does antiwar.com draw those lines?
That's a great question. And yes, they absolutely do try to connect foreign policy to domestic concerns. It's a key part of their argument.
How so?
Well, take military spending. They analyze it through the lens of economic impact. The argument often is that the billions spent overseas could be used to tackle problems right here in the U.S.
You mean like in our own communities?
Exactly. Maybe for infrastructure, schools, healthcare, things people in Deer Park or Pasadena see a need for every day. They also show a lot of concern for veterans affairs.
Okay, that definitely hits home locally.
For sure. Their sources mention an article like Inside VA's years-long AI effort to uncover veterans at high risk of suicide. That's a critical issue for veterans and their families everywhere, including right here in Southeast Houston.
It really is powerful when you draw those lines from global decisions straight to local impacts. What other connections do they make?
They also look at immigration policies and link them to international conflicts. We saw examples like two military bases set to house detained migrants, or journalists among at least 13 arrested during immigration-related protests in Cincinnati.
Ah, suggesting intervention abroad can lead to migration issues at home.
That seems to be the implication. And finally, they touch on civil liberties. The source mentioned an older piece, the FBI vs. antiwar.com, which signals a concern about free speech and potential government overreach, especially when criticizing policy. The underlying message seems to be, these foreign policy choices aren't abstract. They have real, tangible consequences that ripple right back into American towns and communities.
It's fascinating how a site so focused on foreign policy makes those connections back home, really showing the broad reach of these decisions.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned this strong language and clear viewpoint. Who are some of the key voices shaping this perspective?
The sources definitely highlight a few prominent figures. Justin Raimondo, for example. He was a co-founder, a really significant figure in shaping the site's early anti-interventionist and libertarian direction. His ideas laid a lot of the groundwork.
Okay, a foundational voice.
Then there's Ramzi Baroud, who focuses a lot on Palestinian issues, often writing about divisions caused by Israeli policies, drawing on deep regional knowledge. Jonathan Cook is noted for critiquing media narratives, especially looking at the UK's role in the Israel-Palestine conflict, kind of asking tough questions about media coverage.
Right, that skepticism again.
Exactly. And of course, Ron Paul is mentioned as a frequent contributor, known for his consistent libertarian foreign policy ideas, which fit right in with the site's overall stance.
These voices really do seem to give the site its unique personality and reinforce that specific editorial line. And speaking of that skepticism, how exactly does antiwar.com position itself relative to, say, mainstream news outlets?
Well, they consistently position themselves as an alternative voice. Being critical of what they call mainstream media isn't just occasional, it's kind of baked into their identity.
And they don't mince words, do they? The sources show they explicitly accuse outlets like the BBC, the New York Times, of things like obscuring the truth.
Or worse.
Or even being an accomplice to genocide regarding Israel-Gaza coverage. That really underlines their deep skepticism, not just of government narratives, but of traditional news organizations, too.
Yeah, they clearly see themselves as providing a necessary correction to what they view as a biased or incomplete picture.
So we've taken quite a deep dive into antiwar.com today. We've explored its really firm anti-interventionist stance, looked at its heavy coverage of conflicts like Israel-Palestine and Ukraine, and examined its distinct critique of U.S. foreign policy and even the media itself. It's definitely a platform with a very clear, unwavering viewpoint.
It is, and its approach clearly shows that commitment to highlighting the human cost of war and constantly questioning the established narratives. It offers a perspective, a unique one, for people looking for viewpoints outside the usual channels. It's a consistent counter-narrative.
And for you, our listener, especially here in our local communities, Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, the real value, we think, isn't about whether you agree or disagree with antiwar.com.
No, that's not the point.
The point is recognizing that strong alternative viewpoints like this exist. It's about understanding how information on these complex global issues gets presented from different angles.
Yeah.
And it's about being able to critically evaluate the arguments being made, whatever your own beliefs happen to be. Ultimately, getting this kind of knowledge, seeing these connections from global to local, that empowers you, doesn't it? To make a difference right here.
So maybe here's a thought to leave you with, something provocative to consider. In a world overflowing with information about global events, often served up with pretty strong biases, what does it actually mean for your understanding when you deliberately seek out and really analyze perspectives that challenge the mainstream? How might engaging deeply with different sources shape your own insights? Even about issues that seem far away, but, as we've discussed, can have real, actionable connections right here in your community.
If you found value in our show, The Deep Dive, please consider supporting us at thinkanddecklocally.com/donate. That's thinkanddecklocally.com/donate. You can find that link right there in the show notes.